Where do the misfits go when they wanna fit in? Cause I'm feeling alone. Where do the oddballs roll and the psychos swim? Cause I wanna fit in.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Everyday Actor. I am your host, Emma Dayton Peterson, and this is episode 6. And that was my best impression of Dax Shepard from Armchair Expert. After you listen to this episode, you definitely should check out his show if you haven't already. On today's episode, we get to hear from Michael Tesler. Michael is a wonderful friend of mine. Plus, he's also a fantastic producer living here in LA. Today, we'll get to hear all about his endeavors with his production company, Multihouse Entertainment, and also about how he got into LA, how he built his way into the film industry. This entire episode feels like a big giant hug because he is just so wonderful and I can't wait for you to hear it. Just a little disclaimer, we did record this towards the beginning of quarantine, so some of that might be a little different nowadays. And without further ado, here's Michael.
Thank you so much for doing this. How are you doing?
I am good. You know, it's crazy out there, and I think we're all just trying to adapt to this new normal, and totally. There's nothing normal about it, which I think makes it just especially difficult. But, you know, I think that the best that we can do is just try to take care of ourselves and, you know, take care of each other and use the quiet time that we have in the best possible way. Yeah.
Are you doing anything in the arts related creative wise during this time?
Yeah. So I just wrapped up a show, which was a lot of fun. I was a producer for the Great Global Cleanup for the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. That was pretty neat, especially it all came out on the 3-year anniversary of my first ever trip to Los Angeles, which is kind of crazy to think that it was just 3 years ago that I came out to Hollywood for the first time. Just to check it out to see if it was even feasible. And to think that 3 years later, I'd have a producer credit under my belt and would be producing a show starring Zac Efron. Kind of a dream come true in that regard.
And yeah, it's an important, awesome.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. So that definitely took up a substantial bit of time. I've been really fortunate. The Multihouse team, has been hard at work on some exciting new top secret projects that we're really excited about. But we are finishing up right now post-production for, we did a television adaptation of the beloved children's book, Redcoats and Petticoats, which is this awesome true story that I grew up with. And we were approached by the author's family about adapting it for TV. So we filmed a proof of concept a couple of months back, and that's just wrapping up in post-production right now. And that was just a really, really fun project and just a great, it's the Revolutionary War meets Stranger Things in that you have this great ensemble of young actors who basically stumble upon the fact that their mother is a member of George Washington's secret spying during the American Revolution. And it's this just wonderful bit of history that takes place not too far from where I grew up, and just a great story that not a lot of people know about.
That's awesome. So where did you grow up for all of our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Port Jefferson, New York, which is a quaint little seaside village right on the North Shore of Long Island, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from New York City. And it was a really great place to grow up. My parents actually grew up there, and they had met each other in elementary school, which I think is pretty adorable. And my mom actually had her future mother and father-in-law as teachers. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a special place because, you know, everybody is connected to each other in some way, shape, or form. And it can get a little, you can go a little stir crazy growing up in a bubble like that. But at the same time, it's really nice to grow up in a place that really values what it means to have community. And I think a lot of those lessons have kind of stayed with me from place to place that I've lived.
So when you were back home there, is that when you started in film?
Yeah. So I kind of took a weird, journey. I grew up in New York, and in the middle of my junior year of high school, my mom thought that it would be a game changer if we were to pack up our bags and move down to Disney World and start a life trying to work for Disney. And so my mom was a cast member, and it was really hard. I moved to Celebration, which is the Disney town that was created by the Walt Disney Company to kind of be this experimental prototype community of tomorrow.
So an actual town people lived in? Like,
correct.
That's where you lived?
Actual, yeah. There, humans live there.
How funny.
It was weird. Super weird. But the best way I can explain it is, you know, take the most quirky, interesting people from, like, small towns all across America, and then have just the slightly most interesting ones all kind of descend upon this, like, make-believe Main Street America, and it's just a really interesting kind of social experiment. And when I lived down there, I had always been involved in government and politics. I had a nonprofit that I used to run called the International Youth Congress. And when I moved down to Florida, it was the first time that, you know, I had gone from a school with about 100 kids in our graduating class in New York, where everyone was really upper class and there was just a lot of money going around. And then suddenly I was going to school with kids who were living in motels alongside the highway. And I saw a real disparity that I think kind of really kind of got me started on trying to figure out, you know, what can we do to kind of level the playing field and give these kids opportunity, because they're just as smart as I am, if not yet significantly smarter. You know, the only difference is the opportunities that we've been handed. And, I took that and I worked in politics for a number of years, but kind of reached this frustration level where, you know, everyone's so quick to fight and so quick to yell over each other that we don't really take the time to listen. And that's where I think the notion of storytelling as a way of communicating important ideas really began for me, and how I kind of realized that, like, I've always been a performer. I've always loved entertaining people, but, you know, how can that be leveraged in a way that we can help the world? And so that was, you know, the way that I got started is after living in Florida and getting just flustered and kind of sick of the political process, I moved back up to New York, and I was taking night classes at a community college. I was selling newspaper ads door to door and working at a pawn shop, basically taking historical items and trying to figure out how valuable they were. And I was just hustling as hard as I could. And I really wanted to make a difference in my community. And I always thought history is a wonderful way to do that. And ultimately, the way my whole career got started was I was selling these newspaper ads door to door. And the newspaper that I had been working for, they've been around since 1976. And they had this map that they put out every year that serviced this really historical community. And local businesses would take out these ads on this map. And it was a really difficult sell for me because, I didn't really use maps. and in fact, most people didn't really use print maps. And this one older gentleman, I had tried selling to him. And he said, you know, son, come back when you have something interesting to sell. And, at that point, I was really struggling to make tuition. I was struggling to pay rent. I didn't have any money saved. I was really trying to make a life for myself and realizing that selling these box ads on this map wasn't going to do it. I started playing around with this idea of turning this map into an interactive adventure. And the idea is that you would visit real historical sites on this map, and you'd scan a QR code at each one of those locations, and you would be transported back on your phone 240 years, and you would be put into the starring role of your very own spy mission, where you would get to solve a whole bunch of fun mysteries and have to use a spy decoder, and you'd go from location to location. We programmed these wonderful kind of arcade-like games so that kids could play from location to location. And it was all sponsored by local businesses. And then I ended up making the newspaper a nice bit of money. And ultimately, after that, I suddenly found myself a producer of sorts. And my publisher at the newspaper asked me what I wanted to do next. And I started playing around with what would eventually become One Life to Give, which was my first ever feature film, which was a narrative drama. And I was very fortunate. The publisher's grandson, Benji Deneyev, is a great director. He came on board and very quickly kind of helped us get the crew that we needed. We pulled some amazing folks from Emerson College who came down, and we filmed this feature film all on location, which was pretty extraordinary in these real places that existed 240 years ago and are still standing today. And that's really how I got my start. And you know, a lot of those folks that I met in that beginning part of the journey, I actually still work with, which I think is pretty awesome.
That is awesome. You know, I was just, one of my interviews this week, we were talking about the community in film and just how important that is. You really do, when you connect with people, you work with them later. It's never, you can't break those ties. And they shouldn't be broken. Everybody has their own little role, or
Absolutely.
Big role, or whatever role they have.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm sure you've probably observed this in our friendship. You know, it's really important to us that, you know, we all take care of each other the best that we can. And, you know, it's funny because it's not always easy, especially in an industry like this, and especially as we're all kind of going on separate journeys, but all working towards common goals. And, you know, what we've really found is, you know, the best way to conquer Hollywood is to do it like a family, and to have a group of people that are willing to really go up to bat for one another. And, you know, like families, it can be really hard. And, you know, I think that's definitely been a fun learning experience in of itself. But, you know, at the end of the day, the way that I see it is, so long as one of us makes it, you know, whether it be me, whether it be one of the people that I work with, you know, if one person gets there, everybody else will get there too. And that's ultimately, I think, the kind of mentality that you need if you want to survive in a place like this.
Absolutely. If you don't enjoy the people around you, the everyday, you're not going to like this business. It's not an overnight thing. And you really do have to work with people. And it's interesting because when you look at celebrities and different people who, quote unquote, have made it, a lot of their friends, they were roommates when they were 20, or they went to high school together. They knew someone else who knew someone else. It's not luck most of the time.
It's, you know, it definitely feels like the universe propels you in a direction, but if you don't keep it going, you know, that's where it all kind of falls apart. And, you know, I think you set a really great example though, to kind of flip this interview around.
But oh man, I'm in the hot seat. Okay.
No, well, I mean, for the time that I've known you, you've always been somebody who's really had just an enormous work ethic. You know, there's really nothing that you're too timid or too shy to at least tackle and give your best. And, you know, how do you keep up with just, you know, I feel from a producer standpoint, you know, we get a whole other side of the industry. But from an actor's perspective, there's so many things that you're kind of at the mercy of. And a lot of times, does it feel like you're throwing stuff to the wind, or what's that experience like?
You know, a lot of the time, I wish this wasn't true, but a lot of the time it does feel like throwing everything I have to the wind and hoping one leaf lands on a tree. But I enjoy it. I have to enjoy it, or else I would go crazy. And I'm actually really seeing that during quarantine, because I'm forced to do my art. I'm forced to every day sit in front of my computer and do everything I can to find something. Yeah. And I'm forced to record my own things and get this podcast rolling, all these different things. And I'm actually really enjoying myself. So I think that's the only way that I get through it.
Do you think sometimes in the nonstop hustle of it all that you forget to enjoy it?
Yes, I would say so. I forget to enjoy it while I'm auditioning, during a self-tape, while I'm getting ready for an audition, because I'm nervous. I feel like this is my dream, you know? So that's when, for me, I do get a little overwhelmed and I don't enjoy it. So that's actually what I've been working on a lot. So I'm trying to film myself more, get more comfortable, less nervous, put less pressure on it. That has been helping me. But I do. Yeah, I totally get overwhelmed with it.
I think it's funny because you have art, which is, you know, because we've turned it into an industry, there's certain requirements and there's certain expectations that have been put on it. But like art itself is not something that just can be forced. You know, I've tried it and it never really
worked. We all have.
You know, and ultimately it's those quiet moments and the moments when you least expect it, where you get that burst, you know, that spark. And I think the best thing that we can do as creators, and kind of what's, I think, helped me the most, is that whenever that comes, everything else needs to wait a minute, and trying to get that down and really kind of seize that moment. And, you know, I think it's especially interesting. You know, we have a great team of people working at Multihouse, which is my production company. And it's great because we're a hybrid tech and entertainment company. And we get to play around with, we've reached a point where our conversations aren't limited to just the creative side, where we really have to kind of consider the business side and really be strategic in the decisions that we're making and where we're spending our money and, you know, making sure that we're not just creating content that's getting thrown to the wind, but that is, you know, achieving something that has a purpose. And in that, trying to learn how to always ensure that story does come first, but while being business-minded and while being strategic. And I think that's probably been one of my favorite parts of this great growth period in Hollywood, and especially during quarantine. Because it's the first time we've all had a minute to catch our breath and really stop for a minute and identify, you know, when the world is ending, you know, for all intents and purposes, it becomes very clear what's important and not important to us. And, you know, I love what you just said earlier, where, you know, you're kind of giving yourself permission to not sometimes as well, which I think is really important. And that pressure, trying to force it, doesn't always mean you're going to get a great product out of it.
It's true. And I mean, that kind of leads me into, so from an actor's perspective, the whole business side that you're talking about, we don't know. You know, like we don't. I keep thinking about listeners, especially. So for this podcast, I am gearing it mostly towards, I would say, beginning actors, people who are trying to get into the industry, because there is a hole in the podcast industry, in education, just in Hollywood in general, about talking about how to get started and that just daily grind, that it's not glamorous. It's not any of those things. So I guess for a beginning actress or actor, for a beginning actor, what does a producer do?
Yeah.
What does their day look like?
You know, that is the million-dollar question. So, you know, the first thing you need to know about producers is that there are very few producers that do the same thing as other producers. There's a lot of different types of producers. There's executive producers, which conventionally will be the people that are kind of financing the operation, who are on the back end. You'll have producers, just straight producers, who are fundamentally putting together the logistics of a shoot. And will kind of connect the dots and find the people and make sure everything is moving in the way that it's supposed to be moving. You'll have creative producers who are in charge of doing that exact thing, but from the creative standpoint and putting together a creative team. You'll have line producers, which you have above the line and below the line, which basically it is the connective tissue between the business side and the actual production side of things. And so very often you'll see line producers working with budgets and kind of being that go-between where, you know, it's their job to kind of communicate the financial logistics between top to bottom. There's associate producers, which tend to be just producers that are working under producers who are a bit younger and are still learning or are only doing a specialized function. And then there's assistant producers, which do kind of similar. But producers are pretty vital because, you know, very often they'll be the ones that are raising the money. In fact, that's usually always the case. And they're really the driving force of what gets a production to the point where it can even start to bring on actors. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, their job requires a deep rooted understanding in the business elements and the realities of film. And without them, the rest of the industry can't do its job. And it's really frustrating because, you know, one would argue that the role that they're doing is just as vital as a writer or just as vital as a director.
I would say so.
But it's also somebody has to make sure that it can be a functioning enterprise. And that's ultimately what the role of a producer is.
So as a producer, what's your goal?
Well, I mean, for me, my biggest goal is I see entertainment as a solution. I believe that, you know, the way that we digest content now is we use it as a way to distract ourselves from the world's problems. And that's nice. You know, it's nice to have distraction. It's nice to shut down for a little bit. You know, when I was a kid, I had a great director who would always say, you know, your job in theater is to make sure that when folks come in, they're leaving their brains at the door. You know, they want to escape the reality for a time. And, you know, I really see my role as a producer as, number one, figuring out how to create transformative content that really inspires, that really makes people, I don't want to say second guess their reality, but really question it and question their role in things and to build empathy just through really beautiful storytelling. And something that's become apparent to me and wasn't necessarily the goal when I got started is, you know, the first time I was on a film set, which I had created a story, and I look around and I see all of these people in costumes in these beautiful sets. And for a minute, I can pretend that I'm actually in that. That is an extraordinary feeling and something that I love to experience. And, you know, I think the best part of the job is, you know, take Julia Tranfaglia, who is my go-to director for a lot of my projects. She is just this extraordinary young director and producer and writer who is just fearless in everything that she does. And I love figuring out ways to make it so that she can do what she loves. And I feel that way top to bottom for all of our cast and crew. You know, I have so many friends who are actors, and when you create a character that just excites the hell out of them, and they have the opportunity to step into those shoes and bring all of their talent and bring all of this passion into that role, when you see that translate and you add in the costume designer that you were able to bring on, who views every single thread of fabric as another way to tell a story, every patch, every little prop, you know, all of these different pieces are just the compounding of all of this passion from these incredible creative people, and being the person who can orchestrate that and who can and can focus that into like a tangible product, into something that can actually help people and inspire people, is, I think, always the goal. And, you know, I think as a producer in Hollywood and in the 21st century, you know, my hope is that we can fix the point of entry. So if you're a young aspiring person that wants to break in, that, you know, you having creative prowess and having a gift, it should never be thrown to the wind. You know, there are so many different ways that we can utilize everybody's talents. And, you know, I think unfortunately the way that this city is designed, and less so the city, but more so the industry of Hollywood, is that that break-in is such a small, tiny little thing. And, you know, I have to believe there's a better way. And so getting innovative from a business standpoint and how we do that is something that really excites the hell out of me, and is also probably one of the greatest challenges that we could try to tackle.
So when you are putting together these projects, which I'm so glad there's people like you in the world, because it seems so stressful.
It's all right. I mean,
well, how do you first, how do you deal with that stress?
Yeah.
I've seen you on set have just last minute, just big issues, and you fix them, you move on, you don't seem stressed.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
I appreciate that. I mean, I think that the first rule is when you're that person, everybody's looking at you. And, you know, before I was a producer, I was an actor. And, you know, I think the thoughts that are going in my brain as opposed to what I wear on my face are probably two really different things. You know, you're going to get thrown a lot of curveballs. And the way that I see it is that's, you know, you have the scripted side of narrative storytelling, and then you have the non-scripted side, which is the producing. And, you know, in that, I kind of treat it like a narrative in of itself. And, you know, in the moment, trying to figure out the creative problem solving, again, to make sure that everybody can do their jobs in the best possible way is, I think, kind of what gets you through that. Like, you know, we had a situation where, you know, Los Angeles required us to have water trucks on one of our film sets. And Film LA gave us literally 24 hours notice before the shoot that we were going to need this on Labor Day weekend. And,
can you explain what Film LA is for our listeners?
Absolutely. So depending on where you live, you're going to be dealing with a lot of different entities that are just tasked with kind of being the go-betweens between government and filmmakers. And that's, you know, for a lot of reasons, primarily to protect the people that live in communities and to protect the people that are on film sets. And Film LA is a nonprofit organization that is commissioned by Los Angeles County to kind of be the film entity in charge of permitting and in charge of kind of regulating films in Los Angeles County. And, you know, depending on where you are, it's the rules aren't usually very strict. Los Angeles, because of the nature of the city and because of just the nature of the fact that we're home to all these massive film studios, they have a very, very high bar. And that very high bar, I think, is great in terms of a safety standard. I think in terms of smaller production companies trying to break in and trying to get their start, it is not exactly friendly. You know, that was kind of an interesting lesson for us in this process was, you know, just because we're a small startup production company doesn't mean that Film LA is going to treat us with any lower standards than they would Sony Pictures or Universal. And, you know, as a producer, you kind of pat yourself on the back when you somehow manage to follow all those rules. But it's really hard. And I think, unfortunately, it does cause a lot of people to not go the route of getting proper permits, which can be really dangerous for you and your film crews. You know, if something were to happen, it's really important that you do have the proper paperwork, the proper coverage and all that good stuff, because things do happen. So that's Film LA.
So what happened with the water trucks?
So I'm given less than 24 hours notice that I need to get a water truck. They tell me the size of the water truck. And for those that don't know what a water truck is or what its function is, California, as we know, is kind of prone to fire. And, we were filming out in a remote desert location, and ultimately, the fire department deemed that for the size of our crew and the kind of things that we wanted to do on our particular set, there was a war sequence, that they want a truck on standby that could help put out a brush fire and assist the fire department if it was necessary. And so we ended up getting a water truck, only to find out that the water truck, and this is an important lesson that they don't include in any of their learning materials. It's something that you just need to magically know. And so if you're a producer or somebody that is looking to do something here, this is important. They're going to require a union water truck driver to sit with the water truck for the entire day and, you know, be prepared to pay overtime. For this particular water truck that we got, it didn't come with a driver. So we had to return the water truck, get another water truck with a union driver, only to find out that the size that they told us wasn't the proper size that the fire marshal wanted because of the special hose feature. It was a whole crazy thing. By the time it was done, I think I had four different water trucks that I had to find in the course of 24 hours and have brought to set, taken out of set, brought back to set, and then taken out of set. And then brought
Oh, man, and you're in the desert. You're far out there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a 5-minute drive weekend for these water trucks.
Exactly. And they charge you for the drive, too.
That's good.
You know, and in that particular case, you know, that's a $15,000 plus expense that we weren't expecting on a production, which when you think for indie films, that's a real killer.
That's a big amount.
Yeah. And so then it gets into the other side of producing, which is, you know, keeping your calm and cool and figuring it out on set. But the minute it's done is when I think the real stressful stuff begins, because now I have a $15,000 bill that I need to, you know, pay. And that comes with its own set of unique challenges.
It's just so interesting because most actors, we don't know any of this. We just come on set. Everything's ready. Everything's there for us, the crafty, and there's a water truck. I've never thought about where the water truck came from.
Again, that's good because, you know, at the end of the day, if we're doing our jobs right, you shouldn't worry about anything except making sure that you're doing your job. And, like, I don't think it can be understated how difficult an actor's job is. I mean, you look at some of the sequences that we put people through, and they're in the middle of a war scene, or they're, you know, they're holding a fallen comrade in their arms, and, you know, the kind of emotions that you need to pull out and the emotional energy that goes into that is so profound and requires so much. And so, you know, while trying to figure out how to fly in and fly out a water truck on set is a difficult task, you know, I do think that the work of an actor, especially on like a, you know, when you're in a real location and you're in the thick of it, like it's hard. It's exhausting, especially when you're going back and forth and running and taking the same scene over and over and over again, and you're expected to bring that same energy each and every time. I mean, that is no small feat. I mean, what's your process in those moments of keeping your energy and keeping the quality of performance?
It's different for every role. I'll definitely start by saying that. But everyone does just kind of have their own process. I did go to school and I do have that process. I studied Stanislavski. And when I'm stressed, for most roles, I don't necessarily think about my training. But yeah, when I am dying, if I'm dying in a scene or I'm dying of heat on set or just anything is in the way and I can't clear my head, I just go back to my training and I do step by step, like, okay, where am I? Who am I? What's happening in this scene? And then I get sucked into the character and I no longer think about the other circumstances, but it is very helpful for me to have that to turn back to.
Is it hard shutting the character off?
Not for me. I haven't experienced that very often. A couple times during like a specifically tragic scene or something that I'm working on. But most of the time I am able to separate it. I know there are actors who aren't always able to separate it. That's not one of my issues.
Yeah, I mean, especially I started in acting like I had mentioned. And, you know, I always found sometimes you like your characters more than you like yourself, and it's hard to let them go. But I think it's really interesting how many traits of characters that I've played, like little tiny attributes that I really admired about them, that I've tried to keep with me and tried to keep along the journey.
I feel the same way. I have one. There was one play I did a couple years ago, and I was playing someone with DID, dissociative identity disorder. Mm. And I just love her. I love that character. And I think about her as if she's like a friend of mine, because I spent so much time figuring her out.
Yeah.
Understanding her. And I put part of me in her, and then part of her has nothing to do with me. So it was an experience to have those feelings in me. So you're right. You end up falling in love with the characters you're playing, which is kind of like falling in love with yourself. Like, it's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
That's why I like acting.
Yeah. Because it's funny. Not that all actors hate themselves, but like, you know,
it is an escape from yourself.
It is an escape. I mean, that's what it was. The stage was always such a safe place for me. And, you know, I think what I liked better about being on stage than being in front of a camera is that I don't have to look at myself when I'm on stage, you know? The first time, and I try to make cameos in everything that we do, just because it's, you know, you have to have a little bit of fun. And getting to play dress up and jump into a world other than the one that we exist in is always such a thrill. And, you know, it's always so challenging because, like, whatever take they get is what they're going with. And like, as an actor, knowing that like, that's going to define you, is that stressful for you sometimes? Just not knowing what is going to make it on the cutting room floor.
Yes. If I don't feel like I'm in the character, I'm very stressed about it. Cause if I'm not in it, I can feel myself directing myself. I feel like I'm just staring at myself while I'm acting.
Yeah.
So that's when I'm stressed, because I know I can do better. But there's been a lot of times where I feel good about it. If I feel good about my work, they can use whatever take they want. I don't really care what I look like, because they, you know, it's their project for the most. Unless it's something I made myself, it's their project.
Yeah.
But I have worked with actors too. But when I wasn't acting, when I was doing crew work, who were trying to control the control the camera, because they were so nervous about what they would look like. They were complaining about the lighting and the angles, and I was like, "Whoa, that's not our job."
Yeah,
which it sucks sometimes, but it's not our job.
There's a lot of faith that goes into the whole process. I mean, I was working on a show. We had filmed it out in New York, and I'd flown there. It was great. I got to drive a bulldozer. It was super cool. And they asked me to go through the TSA and through the airport with all this footage, and to take all this footage back. And like, I'm holding in my hands what must be like tens of thousands of dollars worth of like footage. And there's so much faith that goes into just passing that off. And, you know, and it goes top to bottom. I mean, you have a gaffer that's not doing their job, and you have a poorly lit scene, or the shadows are all messed up, or you have a DP and the cam team can't seem to pull focus at the right time, and you get that perfect acting performance, but they haven't done their part. And vice versa, you get the perfect, most cinematic shot in the world, and you have an actor that's just dirt their lines. And,
yeah.
You know, and we've all...
Oh, man, it's frustrating on both ends.
Well, it's... And that's part of the magic, is like when you get it and you know that, you know, it's like Ben Franklin used to, you know, he referred to the 13 colonies as 13 clocks all going at different times. And, you know, if the American Revolution is to succeed, all of them need to chime at the same exact moment. And I think the same can be said for film crews. And it's probably the job of the producer is, you know, to set all the clocks as best you can. And hope that it, you know, they don't start yelling at you.
The celebration and the feeling of relief after getting a take right that you've been working on for, you can work on a take for an hour.
Yeah.
If you like, if there's a lot of movement or whatever, it can be forever. That feeling of relief is so amazing.
And it's funny too, because one of the negatives of my job is I don't get to see a lot of that, because it's my job to make sure that everything else is moving. And so that can be a bit frustrating that like those moments of like celebration are so brief and so fleeting because you just got to get started on the next thing. You know, like everyone will be celebrating like, oh man, we finished another great day. And in my mind, I'm like, oh God, is Breakfast Crafty going to be there? Like, you know,
that's true. I hadn't thought about that.
There's always something else. And, it's funny just how long, like, the moment a production is out, you know, and you know that your part is officially done, because that's for a producer, that's where it really stops, is the minute that it's out there. That's such a great stress relief. And it takes so long sometimes.
Do you find yourself able to celebrate along the way? A little, like at the end of every day? Or are you still just kind of continuously stressed?
I think, you know, I usually can celebrate at the end of every day once everybody's been paid. For me, that's like, okay, everything else we can figure out. It's that in between that I think stresses me out more than anything, especially just because of the nature of film and you know, understanding the realities that all of us creatives live in. But I do find a lot of joy and try to have as many victories and celebrations as possible. You know, there's these giddy moments as you see the bits and pieces come together, like, you know, you'll do a wrap party with the cast and crew and just seeing that, like, regardless of what the product looks like, you've managed to create this wonderful family and this wonderful group of people that, you know, they don't care. Like, I mean, obviously they care about how good the product looks, but at the end of the day, like, they just had such a fun time making it that everything else kind of falls to the wayside. And then there's the moments of, you know, like today was great. I got a piece of the soundtrack from Redcoats and Petticoats from our incredible composer, Jake Shadrake. And this guy is just like phenomenal. Like he puts stuff out and it's just cool seeing like, all right, you know, I might be like working with, you know, who could be the next Hans Zimmer or like the next John Williams. And like hearing that music and then seeing that plugged into the actual film itself, and then all of a sudden the grand vision starts to make a little bit more sense. Because like when you're a producer, especially like one that doesn't come from an editing background like myself, you know, the first time they showed me raw footage with like no color correction and like a rough cut and no sound mix, it's so disorienting and awful, and you're like, why did I just throw all this money into a furnace? And bit by bit, as all those pieces come in and you see these incredible craftspeople kind of put together, you know, their particular elements, whether it be color correction, whether it be sound mixing or adding the score, it's magical seeing those bits and pieces come together. And the first time you watch it and it's all kind of put together and it feels like a real film, you know, that's such great gratification.
So if someone wanted to go into producing, what would your advice be to get started?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard because I didn't go to film school. And I'll preface this by saying that like everybody has their own particular journey. And, you know, for the folks that go the film school route, I think that's a wonderful thing. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with pursuing a technical education. And depending on which field and which area of film you want to go into, that can be a really, really beneficial thing. You know, for me, I'm not sure that the job of producer is something that could have been taught to me in school. I wish I had a better formal education in the various responsibilities of different roles and to better understand the technical challenges each department faces so that I can better serve those technical departments. But ultimately, you know, the best thing that you can do if you want to break in is find a mentor and don't be afraid to jump in head first. You know, I produced my first feature film with pretty much no producing experience. We had done a couple of shorts the year prior. And other than that, I was winging it. And, you know, thankfully we had an incredible team and an incredible director and lots of support that kind of helped guided me through. But ultimately since then, I've really relied upon just experience and failing forwards. in a creative way, and definitely just finding mentors along the way. I have an extraordinary mentor, Sarah Davies, who's a great producer over at I&E Entertainment, and she really kind of gave me some extraordinary opportunities. And there's been so many others along the journey. And, you know, I think an important lesson too is teach as many people as many things as you can, because then they can help you do those things and they get better and you get better and we all get better. So if you want to get involved, definitely try to find a mentor and be willing to do some sweat equity. You know, I'm a big believer that, you know, it's very important that creatives are paid. It's very important that we treat those in this industry with respect. But it's also important that if we want to break in, that we're willing to, you know, volunteer ourselves for our friends who are also just getting started. I think that's a great place to do it, where it's artists just helping other artists. And, you know, when we get to the point where we're able to hire people, and we should make tangible goals to get to that point, that we prioritize hiring those people when the time comes. But really putting in and helping others, being a production assistant cannot be understated as vital, you know, to really understand what every person on your film set is doing is the only way to, I think, be a really qualified producer. And I'm still learning new things all the time. And, you know, I hope that I don't stop learning.
I'm sure there's so much to learn, and there's so many. The good thing about this industry is every day there's different ideas, different movies, different locations, and just different things to be done. That's what's so exciting. You never know.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. I've gotten to, you know, I got to produce for Sir Richard Branson and the grandchildren of Jacques Cousteau went down to the Great Blue Hole in Belize. Which was just this extraordinary thing. And trying to produce a underwater shoot with like submersibles and like very important people like Sir Richard Branson, and like navigating those logistics and trying to, like, you know, that comes with a whole unique set of producing skills that, awesome in that moment, are totally irrelevant when a couple months later I'm producing in the middle of the desert. And I'm facing just the entire, you know, opposite extreme of that. And, you know, right after our desert shoot, a month and a half, 2 months later, we were filming in snow in New York. And, you know, it's being able to adapt not just to weather, but to the varying different type of shoots where, you know, this one's a proof of concept. This one's a transmedia piece. You know, this one's a documentary. This one's non-scripted reality. And being able to just kind of go with the flow and kind of roll with the punches as you go from, you know, from genre to genre. I think the most important part, though, is just always trying to have a plan and always trying to be organized and focused in where you're putting your energies.
Is there anything as a producer you wish actors knew or you would want them to know?
Yeah, I mean, first thing is, we might not always seem like we care, but that's because we care a lot. And, you know, I think we're all after the same creative goal. You know, like, there might be some producers that get into it to think like, heck, I might be able to make a lot of money. But I think by and large, they're just really creative people that couldn't wait around any longer for somebody else to make their dreams come true. And I think sometimes they can get a little distracted along the way and can kind of forget that, you know, but for actors, I think the really important thing to know is that, you know, we hear you and we see you, and we want to make sure that we're doing our best to make it so that you can give your best. And I think, you know, ultimately, I think a great trend that's been happening is that, you know, I think actors for a long time in this industry were segmented in a way where you could only just be an actor. You know, you couldn't be a writer. You couldn't be a producer. You couldn't be a director. And I think, you know, the past 10 years or so, we've really kind of dispelled that. And I encourage actors to actively participate in ways, you know, of multiple ways of telling stories, because, you know, I think when you're in front of camera, I think you offer something in a writing room and have a better sense than what a lot of writers who have never been in front of camera might experience. And same goes for producing. You know, you're going to really be considerate of, like, you have a crafty meal, for example, where, you know, let's say you're out somewhere, the location's like 90 degrees, it's hot as heck outside, and you're feeding people pasta, you're feeding people like really heavy things, and you're an actor that's eating these before a really important role. You're not going to give your greatest performance when you're walking around just like, ugh, you know, and being able to really kind of see that and understand the needs, I think, brings a lot. And I think having good communication with your producers, and kind of sharing your needs and what would help you achieve the best performance. I think all those are really, really important.
Well, that's why I love working with you. You are so appreciative of everybody. You really show how much you respect us. Michael's one of the best people to work with. If you get the chance to work with him, work with him. Well, I could talk to you all day. I don't know if there's anything you feel like you didn't get off your chest for our listeners.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, a lot of folks are too scared to ever make the leap. And if COVID has shown us anything, it's that we shouldn't take anything for granted. You know, we shouldn't take time with friends for granted. We shouldn't take time with family for granted. We shouldn't take our dreams for granted. And, you know, this is going to leave a hole in this industry, and there's going to be a void for a while. And it's really, really important that we get back on our feet and that we're not scared to take leaps in creating and innovating and in figuring out new ways of telling stories and trying to take what could be perceived as an awful negative for our industry and transform it into something positive. And so, you know, for anybody listening, if there's a project, if there's a dream, if there's an ambition, if there's something that you've been waiting on the sidelines to achieve, do it. There's no reason that you can't. You know, if I can go from selling newspaper ads door to door and working in a pawn shop over the weekends while taking night classes to producing a show with Zac Efron in like a 3-year period, there's absolutely no reason that you can't materialize this dream. And I think the first step is being brave enough to go to where you physically need to be in order to do that. And to trust yourself to figure it out. You know, every person that I know out in LA, every person that's like a truly hard worker is working multiple gigs, is working multiple jobs, doing things that are not necessarily what they came to Los Angeles to be doing, you know, but like the work ethic and the passion that comes from a creative person who is laboring away as a waiter or as a waitress, or is laboring away working retail and is going to these day jobs while making sure that they do their auditions, while making sure that they're going out and working with their creative friends. Like that hustle is what creates great talent and is what creates great storytelling. And ultimately, like the struggles that I faced in my life and the challenges that I've had, you know, like, the worst day in Los Angeles and in this industry is still one of the greatest days of my life, because I'm lucky enough to be pursuing something that I love. And most importantly, pursuing it alongside people that I love. And, you know, that's the other thing. Like, if you're out here to find success for yourself, and you know this so well, like, it's not going to happen unless you have a group of people who are committed to each other and are committed to something greater than just personal success. And, you know, ultimately that's why we're going to do it, because the way that I see it is we have no other option. So, you know, all that being said, I love your dog. And
did you hear him barking?
Of course I did.
Well, it's just so funny. COVID has, I had a whole podcast studio picked out, like, that I was going to record. COVID has really done a number on all of us.
It's quite all right. We have like an evil ice cream truck that goes by our apartment every day. And I was just praying that it wouldn't go by
I've been choosing like 6 p.m. for all my interviews because I have construction on the two buildings next to me all day for it's been months. And I haven't been home this much, so I didn't realize how constant it is. It's so horrifying.
It is. But you know,
man.
Let's pray that when this is all done, there will be no potholes in the roads, that our infrastructure will be brand new, and
I hope so.
Of new apartment complexes built so that all the people listening who are waiting on pursuing their dreams will have a fancy new place to move into.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want to come out to LA, you kind of just have to make the leap. That's like
It's not about security. It's not like I came out here. I did not have first month's rent figured out. I literally came out with enough for the security deposit, and I just kept falling forwards. And that's the best that we can do. Is, you know, if you have a dream, if you want to be here, you will figure it out. And if you don't have whatever that is in order to do that, then that's okay. But that just means that, you know, maybe
you'll
not
have
yet.
A different path.
But exactly. And there's a lot of different, you know, I mean, I'm 26 turning 27 next week. And, you know, I look at like Harrison Ford, for instance, who I think was in his 30s when he was discovered.
I think so.
You know, you look at a lot of these talent where it's, you know, there is no timeline. There is no path. You know, there's no book that you're going to read that's going to give you the magical answer. All that you can do is be brave enough to try to create your own story. And isn't that what us storytellers are out here to do in the first place?
I love that. That's so true. So where can we find you? How can our listeners follow your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram and on Facebook. We are Multihouse Entertainment, and that would be our handle on both. You can also follow my personal Instagram, which is MJ Tessler, TESSLER. And you can find us on multihouseentertainment.com. And we also have a YouTube channel where you can check out some of our content. And, you know, Emma, I'm really, really proud of you and everything that you're doing. And I think right now, probably more than ever, people really need to hear these stories and to know that, you know, dreams are possible. And I think you're a prime example of somebody that has put in the work, put in the passion, and has maintained their quality of character and has really given some wonderful performances. And, you know, everybody in the Multihouse family, we love you very much. And we're so appreciative.
Oh, I love you guys. Don't make me cry, Michael. This is my podcast. I can't cry on my own podcast.
That's what I'm here for.
I know.
That's
you're like turning the hot seat on me. Making me blush over here.
So what is, of all the things that you've learned so far on your show, what has been the thing that's really kind of stuck with you the most?
So I am relatively, like, I'm at the beginning. I think, you know, I've learned a lot from the interviews, but I think the number one thing has been like what we were talking about before, about you just do it. Because I had so many plans of how to do it perfectly, how to get the best podcast ever. But everything got canceled. Everything got just kind of put away, put to the side. And I actually think, and I decided I was thinking about not doing it. I was going to wait until after all this was done. And just, I decided to be resilient and to just do it. And I actually think it's turning out a lot better than it would have any other way. So while I'm learning so much from you guys, I think I learned that about myself. And that has kind of been my biggest takeaway so far. But I'm only like a week in. So ask me in like a month and I'll have like 8 million different lessons.
I think that you're leading by example, and you know, the podcast world is very lucky to have you, and Los Angeles is a better city for having you as a resident. So
you too. Wait, when did you come here? Just for our listeners, when did you get here?
I moved here about a year and a half.
Oh, man, has it been that long already? Time is flying. Yeah, I remember when you moved here. We already knew each other.
Yeah, I'm like, how do we even know each other?
We met through mutual friends on Instagram. Like, how crazy. The power of social media.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it is. And I think that's the other thing. And it's just a good note, too, is like, you never know how these random connections will all pan out. But you have to view every person that you meet as like a potential person that you're going to work with for the rest of your life. And, you know, it's really nice because, you know, I look at my Los Angeles family and I've only known a lot of these people for a year and a half. And I can't imagine my life without them. And, you know, I certainly feel the same way about you. I'm really excited to see what projects we have down the pipeline that we can include.
Yeah, I always want to work with you guys. So anytime. And we'll have a nice little coffee date after all this is over. I know we've scheduled like four of them right before this that we kept changing.
That's fine. It was my fault.
No. It was
my fault. Yeah.
Life happens. Not a big deal. It's just funny that we're like, okay, in 2 days, next week. And then COVID.
So a great rule for your listeners, don't cancel on coffees unless you're like super tight. in which case, like, it's totally fine. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. And you know, if there's ever anything you need or anything that we can do to help, you just let us know.
You too. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Stay safe. And thanks for listening, everybody.
I'll see you soon.
Thank you everyone for listening, and thank you Michael so much for coming on this podcast. All of your information has just been completely invaluable to actors and also to other people in or not in the industry. So thank you again, and I can't wait for that coffee date. Our theme music was brought to you by the lovely Alyssa. To hear more of her music, make sure to check her out on Spotify.